Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Back with us, Republican New York State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay. Leader Barclay, welcome back to the Capital Connection.
Thanks for having me on, as always.
Well, let's start with the fact that we now have a budget in place, $237 billion. And I'm going to give you an open forum right now. Tell us what you don't like about this current budget that's in place.
Well, first of all, it's more of the same, unfortunately. We've had a spending addiction here in New York for the last, decade or more. And unfortunately, to pay for all that spending, you have to tax. And we have $237 billion over 5 years. That's a $64 billion increase, 37% approximately. And unfortunately, New Yorkers can't afford that. And as a result, we're seeing, unfortunately, millions of people leave the state. So I think my biggest concern is the size of this budget. It doesn't seem like there's any political will to change that trajectory of just continuing to spend. Whenever we have a politically difficult issue, instead of addressing that issue head on, we tend just to throw more money at it. And certainly this year was no difference than past years, unfortunately. You know, New Yorkers, we spend more on state and localities, about $15,000 per resident. That's 50% more than the U.S. average. So you can see how far out of whack we are with our sister states or, the rest of the country.
Well, and similarly, when you remark about spending in the budget, we can look toward education and the idea that the governor, Governor Hochul, a Democrat, wanted to take away the provision called Hold Harmless, which would allow schools to get more money each year. The Democrats, particularly in the assembly, reacted negatively toward that. They say, no, we are not going to take money away from these school districts. And yet there's a problem with the basic foundation formula. You know, it's coming out of the property tax base, and it seems like no matter how the schools are funded, they're not funded equitably throughout the state. And to your criticism, it's more money being added to what may not be fair and equitable.
Right. So again, we spend, I think, almost $30,000 per student in New York State. That puts us at 91% of the national average. So we're well past the national average. So why do we spend so much? Well, I think you're right, Dave, because we're not directing school aid where it needs to go. In fact, instead of making those hard decisions of probably allocating school aid in an equitable way, we just add more money to try to make everybody happy. I wasn't against putting the Hold Harmless back in there, because I noticed that a lot of the schools that were harmed by that were rural schools, and actually low-wealth school districts.
Sure.
But those schools also, to agree with the governor to some extent, those are the schools that have lost student population. So going forward, we have to make some changes to our school districts, whether we do, and I think I mentioned this on the show, is whether we do consolidation might be the best bet going forward with those. And I know that's a politically hot-button issue. In fact, I think I told you in my own family, I mentioned that once and I almost got thrown out of the house. So I know that's difficult, but that proves my point that instead of making those difficult decisions, we're kind of just putting more money towards a problem. And again, this is not sustainable because New Yorkers simply can't afford it.
Well, and then there's the idea of let's study this a little more. To your point, I think lawmakers do recognize that something needs to be done here. It doesn't seem to be the will to push it further and get it done within the framework of a budget. And they've now sent it to committee, the old let's put it out to study. The governor and legislative leaders agree to study the foundation aid formula to be performed by the Rockefeller Institute of Government. It seems like the studies go away to disappear and never be seen again. Or if the recommendations come out, they're not acted on. And it seems like the leadership and the majority and the governor could sit down and make some of those hard decisions rather than give it to some committee to look at.
Absolutely. I think that would be ideal and get public input. That's one of the struggles we also have here in Albany, and particularly with the budget process. There isn't a lot of transparency. There is almost nil, I would say, public input in an official manner. Obviously, people put their two cents in by lobbying, but not an official hearing or something where there's actually back and forth with questioning in a public arena. So I do think that's a problem. Interestingly, you know, I've been in the legislature a long time. The school aid formula always has been incredibly complicated. It got somewhat simplified when we did the foundation aid formula, but now that's seems like it's getting outdated. It's been in effect for over 10 years. So I think transparency, simplification, and an idea of what the school districts need to a more equitable spread of school aid, I think could result in not having to spend as much money as we are currently in school aid in New York State.
One of the other areas of the budget where they did reach agreement was a housing deal. This after the previous session where they could not come to an agreement. It seemed to make concessions on either side when it came to tenant protections and protections for landlords. Where do the Republicans come down on this housing deal?
Well, we're very troubled with the provision of putting good cause eviction into the budget. Essentially, this takes rent control that we have in New York City and tries to implement it throughout the state. The good news is that localities have to opt into good cause eviction. Essentially, what good cause eviction is, a landlord can't evict a tenant unless it's, I hate the word, good cause. And essentially, that means, you know, they're not paying their rent or having some criminal activities going in. So it locks the tenant into this tenancy with the landlord. And then it also puts a provision that the landlord can't raise their rents, albeit they put a pretty widespread there. I think it's something like 10% increase. But why are we giving these tenants these protections? By the way, you know, there has to be a balance here. And traditionally, in my experience, when a landlord has a good tenant, they don't want to evict the tenant. They generally work with a tenant. When we start mandating these programs, it prohibits developers or anyone or even small families that want to, you know, rent out maybe a house that they inherited or whatever to make a little extra income. It makes them not want to do it because they're stuck basically in a perpetual tenancy by the tenants, and they can't evict them. If they want to do something different with the property or they want to raise the rents, whatever, this good cause eviction would really prohibit them. And I think ultimately will lead to less housing, as it's done in New York City, by the way, not more. And so I would prefer, and I think many in our conference prefer, to take out some of the restraints that are currently on people that want to develop real estate, like being evicting or like foreclosure on it. It's almost impossible to foreclose on property now. So we put so many roadblocks in the system that really tilt the balance more towards the tenants, away from landlords, that are really prohibiting growth in housing in New York State. And why would we want it? Why possibly would we want to take the problems we have in New York City and expand them throughout the state?
We're speaking with New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. Will Barclay, you mentioned this in this conversation about housing, but this is certainly happening in New York City. Upstate communities will have to opt in for this legislation in terms of housing. And I spoke with Liz Krueger, obviously a progressive, a Democrat from Manhattan. She thought that many of the cities, the upstate cities, will take a hard look at it, but she didn't have as much hope for more rural communities. And it seems like, at least this is me now saying this, that it will probably break down around Republican and Democratic lines.
Yeah, well, I think so. And I think it's a trend, at least on my colleagues across the aisle, to become more extreme in some of their ideology, where this really is taking the private market away and sort of putting government control over housing. And, you know, a lot of people in the urban areas in New York State probably sympathize with this. But, you know, as I said, you can't be a little bit pregnant. You can't be a little bit socialist. And this is really socialism by taking away private property from the landlords. So it's problematic. And I worry that it's going to exacerbate the housing problems that we have in New York State because of maybe ill-conceived opt-in policy by some of these urban areas in upstate New York.
Is socialism too strong a word? I can hear people yelling at the radio, wait a minute here, you know, a public education, you could argue, is a socialist institution. The mail is a socialist institution. If we're going to have services, we have to cooperate.
Right. Well, there's certainly areas in the country or the policies that we have that, yeah, that's absolutely true. Our national defense, you could say, is socialist. But that I agree with. But here that we're taking private property, we're having government intrude and telling a contract between a property owner and a tenant what they can do and what they can't do. And I think that's a step too far. But ultimately, it will lead where the property owner won't have control over his or her own property. And that,
you.
To me, is that is indicative, and that's really the tenets of socialism in my mind.
Well, let's turn to an issue that Republicans have been concerned about for a long time. I'm going to make it more specific than simply public safety and direct it at what's in the budget here when it comes to retail theft and hate crimes. The Public Protection Bill includes provisions to combat retail theft, including increasing penalties for assaulting a retail worker, and expands the list of hate crime eligible charges. What do you and your colleagues in the Republican Party make of this bill that went through the legislature?
See, David, I can be positive on something, and I was
right.
Happy that there is some recognition that we have a crime problem in New York, and it, certainly the shoplifting or smash and grab issues that I think in the city is being caused by a small group of criminals. It's not just, you know, people walking in, teenagers or somebody stealing some gum here. So ultimately, those changes, particularly I like the aggregating the value of the property being stolen so they could charge someone with grand larceny. I think that I know my colleague Mike Riley from Staten Island had a similar bill. So we were pleased to see that put in the budget. So it wasn't all doom and gloom in this budget. And so I was happy with that. Actually, I voted for that provision of the budget bill.
Also, you and I have talked about this, which is the cannabis industry in New York, which even the governor acknowledged was handled very poorly and has had to replace people, put new people in to wrangle the industry into some sort of shape. Now we see in the budget the cannabis enforcement, long-sought reforms allowing the Office of Cannabis Management as well as local agencies and law enforcement enhanced powers to shut down illegal dispensaries is in the budget. And the issue, obviously, is we create this space for legal recreational marijuana and hopefully putting more money into the state coffers as a result, but you can't really have a stable industry if the illegal shops and the black market is left vibrant.
Right. And so, again, I'm happy there's moves in that direction to crack down on the illegal market of cannabis, but call me skeptical if I think that's going to be successful. Ultimately, really what you have is the legalization of marijuana, and, you know, private person, can, I've forgotten what the amount was, but private person can have something like, don't quote me, I think it's like 5 pounds of marijuana, a substantial amount of marijuana without it being criminal. And I think until you start addressing that, you're not really going to be able to crack down on these shops. But I do think that's a step in the right direction. One thing I can really agree with the governor, and maybe it'd be more apt to say she agrees with me in our conference, because we've been ringing the alarm bell about this. It's been an unmitigated disaster. Not only the problem with the huge influx of illegal shops, which, by the way, I just get off topic. I just saw a story in the Post the other day where they were saying the guy was laughing and said, "Yeah, come on, I'll see if they actually going to end up shutting us down." So he almost
saw that.
So I'm a little skeptical whether we'll have any success doing it, hopefully, but that is a step, at least trying to do that step in the right direction. But putting aside the illegal market, I mean, the legal market's been a disaster too. There was all sorts of promises that this was going to be a great economic boom for New York State, but it hasn't turned out that way. In fact, a lot of people, particularly some agriculture and farmers, put big investments in this, but turned out the licensing process was so inept that they couldn't get licensing. So a lot of people have lost a lot of money trying to, you know, ride this wave of legalization of cannabis. So it's been nothing but a disaster. And I do agree with the governor. I think she's finally seen the light and agrees with us.
Well, let's turn to the New York Heat Act. This did not make it through the legislature, but there's talk now that the governor supports it, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, even Carl Hastie, the speaker, suggesting that it still may get done before the end of session. The act would cap utility bills for low-income New Yorkers. Your thought on the New York Heat Act? I know that part of that, an obstacle, was the idea of making companies pay.
Right. I think that's ultimately what they want to do, is somehow have utilities pay, which ultimately means the consumer is going to be paying. I think we have some big problems with energy in New York State and this push to go green. I haven't talked to any of my colleagues on the Republican side that don't believe that we shouldn't have a diversified energy source in New York, and that should certainly include green energy. But Democratic colleagues constantly want to put the cart in front of the horse and start mandating these green energy policies where really the technology is not there, unfortunately, yet. We can have windmills, we can put solar, which, by the way, as you know, David, you travel across upstate, they're throwing up solar panels everywhere. My town's got, you know, hundreds of acres now with solar panels. The problem with both wind or solar is when the sun doesn't shine, it doesn't produce energy. When wind doesn't blow, it doesn't produce electricity. We have no way to store that energy now. So we are spending billions and billions to encourage renewable energy, but ultimately we're still going to need that baseload energy, electricity, so we can turn the lights on, you know, at night, and we can always make sure there's dependable electricity. So we almost have two systems going here. It's incredibly inefficient. It's incredibly expensive. And at the end of the day, you have to ask, why? Why are we doing this? Well, allegedly because of global warming, and we want to reduce CO2 emissions, which is, not a bad goal to have. But ultimately, New York only emits something like 0.04% or 0.4% of all the global emissions. So even if we're successful in doing this, spending billions and billions of dollars, and the HEAT Act is certainly part of that, what's the ultimate outcome? And I don't think we looked anywhere near talking about doing something in a public arena and having hearings. We haven't had anywhere near a good enough discussion on the cost-benefit analysis of whether it's the HEAT Act or all these other so-called green policies that have been pushed by environmentalists and by a lot of the Democrats. I just think we're not at that stage yet, and we're spending a lot of money on it that simply New Yorkers can't afford.
One of the other areas of the budget where they did reach agreement, you ready? Newspaper and broadcast media jobs program. Eligible news outlets will be able to claim a $5,000 tax credit for each new full-time employee hired, up to a maximum of $20,000. The tax credit is based on net new jobs created, so a newsroom can't just lay off a whole team and hire a new reporter to put in place. The legislature seems to at least recognize that our industry, media, is suffering. The models that once supported both print and broadcast in terms of advertising revenue have not held true, and we're seeing layoffs all over the industry. And if there's one profession that's in the Bill of Rights, it's the media, you know, the free press, the idea that we need legitimate information. We need the press to be able to report and be the fourth estate, especially to hold government accountable. You know, it's a tough one when you're talking about government money, and you know we're speaking through public radio now, which does get
right.
some state funding, but what
right.
do we do if the fourth estate is crucial to having a democracy, and we can't find it in the traditional ways? Should government be helping?
Well, you know, David, what did I think it was Ben Franklin might have said, don't challenge someone who's got control of the pen, or what was it?
Right.
So you're putting me in a very tough situation to say, but, you know, I want a couple of things. First of all, I really do appreciate local media. I know I live in Oswego County. We have some great local media there that I think does a tremendous job, and, you know, they do keep local elected officials and what's happening, the public abreast of what's happening in local government. I do think that's a tremendous service. But the one thing I find interesting is, I think it was Kerry Warner, maybe Brad Holman, who sponsored this bill. But, you know, in other arenas, they don't think tax credits or any tax policy helps. But all of a sudden, you know, when it comes to this, that obviously I guess they want support, which I'm not against supporting local press and journalism. But, you know, why do all of a sudden tax breaks help in this situation? But when it comes to tax and the individual or whatnot, well, people don't, you know, they don't make life decisions or where they live decisions based on what their tax rates are. So I do find it a little bit interesting that all of a sudden tax, same with the movie tax credits, too. You know, we supplied, I think, $800 million. Dollars to movie studios to produce movies in New York State, and all of a sudden tax policy makes a big difference to keep these people here, but when it comes to our own citizens, we don't think that is so important or has that much of an effect. Well, I'm telling you, it does. So the only other issue I would say on this tax credit, which again I could be open for any tax relief for any industry, I do have a problem thinking, does that mean, you know, journalism is important, but there's 100 other industries that are very important to New York? Are we going to constantly be trying to pick and choose who we want to provide political favors for versus I would rather see a broad-based reform of, you know, our spending and tax system in New York State. I think that would be much more effective than, you know,
trying to pick the former industry over other industries. The former CEO and host of this program used to always say, you know, we should get the money from the public. If somebody else needs the money more from the state legislature, give it to them. We'll ask the people who listen to support us. So I can see that point.
Well, I'll say this. Yeah. I'll say this, David. Support your public radio station. I support that.
Yes, you do.
And I have. I do in the past, too.
No question. No question. Well, migrants, this is a huge issue. Obviously, $2.4 billion in the budget to deal with this. It's really dependent upon the federal government and the Democrats and Republicans in Washington to get together and make some critical decisions. In the meantime, though, the state is burdened, especially New York City, by an overflow. You know, what do you make of this in the budget?
Well, I'm greatly troubled by it. I mean, the $2.4 billion we have, it's more than what we increased school aid. So you got to talk about priorities. Is this really where we want to make our priorities for spending? And I think you nailed the nail on the head by saying this is really a federal government problem. I happen to put a lot of blame on the feet of the Biden administration and their open border policy. I think one thing we need to do on the federal level is secure our borders so this isn't as big of a problem. And as I mentioned on the show before, I am pro-immigrant. And I do think, you know, we're all immigrants in this country. I do think there's great economic reasons. I think there's great cultural reasons and other reasons why we should support immigration. But I strongly say that should be legal immigration and not this idea that people just come across the border, say they're seeking asylum, and then be able to stay in this country. I think that's a broken system. And I would call on both Republicans and Democrats in Washington to get their act together and get a solution to this obviously untenable situation.
No question. All right, real fast, I got a couple of last-minute questions have to do with the issues of the day. News that's come out and has been out there in the last week, which is we just learned this morning, the special election in the 26th Congressional District in Western New York has gone to the Democrat, Tim Kennedy. He's been declared the winner. He ran against Republican West Seneca Town Supervisor Gary Dixon for the seat. That majority is even slimmer now for the Republicans. What do you make of it?
Well, I guess I didn't even hear that news, so I mean, I'm not surprised. I don't know how much coverage there was on because I think that was an expected result. I do think it'll be an interesting election year. Obviously, I've said before, I'm worried about it for our own assembly seats and obviously Senate seats and congressional seats. But in a presidential year, we all tend to be coattails, and I don't know if you can read into whether that seat was a bellwether. I wouldn't put it too much of a bellwether just because of you know, it's heavily Democratic registration there. But ultimately, we have, you know, two candidates. We have Trump and Biden, and it'll be, I think neither of them are preferred candidates for the majority of the population in the U.S., but these are the candidates, and it'll be interesting to see. I always use the term interesting. For me, it's a lot more than just interesting, but it will be interesting ultimately to see how this ends up and how much they can pull either way with their coattails.
Now, what about the protests, obviously, that are happening on college campuses across the country, Columbia University in New York, Hamilton Hall, breached by police after students barricaded the building? You know, campus protests, you know, student protests should be allowed, and protesting is a hallmark of our country. They also, campuses have to worry about student safety, and that issue crashes directly into the way some of these protests are unfolding on the East and West Coast and in other spots in the nation. What's your sense of how this is all unfolding right now?
Well, I'm thrilled that they are cleaning out the protesters in Columbia. I think it's time to do that. My understanding is, you know, these aren't all just students there, by the way. These are professional agitators, I think, get ingrained here with a political agenda that may be far and beyond what the students maybe are advocating for. This is what my beliefs what happened on campuses of higher ed over the last several years. There's become such an imbalance there, and free speech is, I mean, obviously critical for any higher learning, but this is the antithesis of free speech. When you don't allow other voices in, which apparently is what's happening on these campuses, that squelches free speech. So you're right. Everybody has a right to voice their opinion, and they should be encouraged to do that in a safe and, you know, manner. But by, you know, shouting down anyone that's in opposition and not letting that speech come out, I think has been a problem on college campuses. And I think this is the end result that we've gotten with these sit-ins. So I'm glad that they're cleaning those up. I think it's well within the rights of these colleges to do it. Interestingly, you know, you see in other areas where this hasn't taken hold, because I think the administrations in some of those other areas of the country have stood up and said, we're not going to allow this. Columbia, unfortunately, I think, let it go too far and just grew from there.
Finally, you can't avoid it. The former president of the United States is in a hush money trial right now in New York City and Manhattan. And from my understanding from the head of the state party in New York, Ed Cox, you're fairly lined up to endorse him coming up, most likely. Yeah. But what happens if he is convicted? Do you have to reevaluate your endorsement?
Well, yeah. First of all, I'm very suspect of whether he'll be convicted in this case, because it's so tenuous of what the charges are on this. I just can't think it's, as a lawyer, I just can't think, even if he gets convicted in this case, I just can't think that's going to hold up on appeal. So I think that's probably a very long shot. I do worry about, you know, these cases being brought against Trump. I do think there's what they call it, lawfare now. They're calling it where there is sort of political motivations behind these prosecutions. And I think that's really, really unhealthy for democracy. And so I have endorsed Trump, first of all, so I've done that publicly. I do think he'll be by far a superior president than the current president that we have. And we'll take, you know, we'll take everything and see. Anything can happen. Something could happen to Biden in this time. We might have to, you know, Democrats will have to reevaluate whether they want to continue to support him. But these are the choices that we have now. And in my mind, if it's between Biden and Trump, I'm Trump all the way.
All right. Well, you heard it. Send your cards and letters to Will Barclay. We've run out of time for another Capital Connection. He's Will Barclay, the New York State Assembly Minority Leader, a Republican. And I do appreciate you being willing to come on and speak to our listeners and share your perspective on all things New York State government and politics. And I look forward to speaking to you again.
Well, thanks, David. I always appreciate you giving me a voice on your program. Anytime you need me, I'm happy to come on.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.